Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Ken Nibali, Associate Commissioner for Disability in the Social Security Administration. And joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, John Lanehart. Well, Ken, you said something very interesting in the first segment when you described that approximately 5% of our population is on disability. And I'm curious, is that a large number or a small number, and how do we fare compared to, say, the rest of the world?
Sure. Whether you consider small or large obviously depends on where you're coming from. One of the interesting aspects of the job is to deal with lots of advocate organizations, people who really look out for people with disabilities, et cetera. And you can imagine their pressures generally are there are a lot more people who should be on the rolls in disability. The truth is a standard in this country is really a very tough one. It's, as I said earlier, not that you just can't do your past job, but that really you are unable to do any job that exists in our economy. That is not a standard that many other countries use, and therefore you find when you look around that this country's program compares pretty favorably if you're doing that in terms of the percentage of people on the rolls. There are a number of European countries that are closer to 10 or even 15% of eligible population on disability benefits because their definition is a little easier. Maybe it's just that you can't do your past job or whatever. And, of course, they have different programs anyway with the sort of national health insurance, and they all roll together. So, but I suspect many of you also know that there's higher taxes in many of those countries to support those kinds of programs. So this country from the word go, when Social Security started, did not include disability. When it started in the mid-30s, it wasn't until 1954 that we really started a disability program, and it was for the very reason of being concerned about what percentage is it. It's 5%. You know, maybe you live with that, but people were very concerned about it getting much higher. And every once in a while, Congress will come along do something with the regulations and laws to maybe tighten up here or add benefits there. But it's been pretty much in that range for a number of years now. The concern, of course, is we are now facing the major part of this country's population, the baby boomers, hitting what we know are the disability-prone years, which is around age 50. That's when people really start applying for disability. So keep an eye on that, and you'll see Congress starting to probably deal with issues in relation to disability.
Ken, SSA has expressed a commitment to continually improving service to our nation's citizens. How are you using innovative solutions in the Office of Disability to achieve this goal?
Well, we take advantage of absolutely anything we can find along the way. Running the program is a challenge. We deal with 50 states running much of it. It's kind of a constant challenge to do that. One of the things I'd like the audience and the American public to know is we are jealous about the fact that when we put people on the disability rolls, we like to make sure that they still belong there and that we periodically review them. They are called continuing disability reviews, and depending on the nature of your impairment and some other factors, we may review you every year, every 3 years, or every 7 years, something like that. The issue is that's a pretty expensive process. You have to go out, write to people, call them back into the office, get updated medical information, and make sure that their medical condition still exists and that they are still unable to work. In fact, it's so time-consuming and expensive that back in the early 90s, we got totally away from doing it, and we built up a tremendous backlog because we felt the right thing to do was to put what were some stretches of our resources at the time on deciding new people. There were still several million people a year coming through the door, and it was important to find out if they belonged on the rolls or not. And we simply didn't have the resources to keep up with looking at the folks on the rolls. Several things happened. Congress got very helpful for us. The Office of Management and Budget with Congress actually gave us exceptions to some of the caps on federal spending. And what they said is, we will give you dollars to do these reviews because we believe that when you do them, some people will come off the rolls and the amount that we save in those benefits will at least offset what's spent. Has absolutely happened, something like a 10-to-1 ratio, okay? And for the American taxpayer, I think that's very important in the stewardship of the program. The second thing we did is say, you know, we've been doing reviews on a lot of people over the years, and we've learned something. And we can learn something from experience to say, if we look at the types of people who are on the rolls, how long they've been there, whether they've had a prior review or not, we ought to be able to predict whether or not they are going to come off the rolls if we review them again. And so we did that, and we called it profiling. And we looked at the characteristics, as I said, of a number of people. And we came up with a pretty good predictive model a number of years ago, back in the mid-90s or so, that would tell us that this group of people really should, we should call them in, do a full medical review of them, et cetera. But another group of people, the likelihood of them coming off the rolls is so low that all we're going to do is send them what we call a mailer. We send them about a six or eight question. It's really one page form, and they answer questions like, are you back to work? Has your doctor told you you can go back to work? You know, have you medically improved? And as long as they answer no to those questions, you know, under penalty of signature, and our data tells us that, that with their impairment and history, they don't really have much of a likelihood of going back on the rolls, that counts as doing one of our reviews. And we are now up to doing about half of the reviews that we have to do every year that way. Now, where Price Waterhouse has really come in to help us is we knew that we had to update and improve that profiling. And they came in and were extremely helpful in taking more current data than we had taken many years ago, and not only updated what we had done, but also greatly improved by the way you compare things and the kind of characteristics that are included. And now we're reaching out to some other agencies like CMS, for some of you that will be HCFA, the Healthcare Finance Administration, and was sharing some data with them. We're really finding that we're really improving that process. So not only is it more efficient and enables us to keep up and keep just the people on the rolls who belong there, but it's also a lot more humane for the people involved. You know, if you're someone who's obviously disabled and aren't going to improve, let me use the example of a quadriplegic. They almost always obviously meet our definition of disability, and that's not like likely something that you will improve from. So therefore, why would we have you come in every 3 or 7 years to prove you're in the same position? If we know that, we'll let you just certify that that's still where you are, and you don't have to come in and be exposed to another doctor's review, et cetera. So we're very pleased with that, and really very pleased with the sort of government, you know, private sector partnership that we've had, not just with PricewaterhouseCooper, although you're one of our shining examples, I will say that, but with a number of others who have come in and helped work on issues like this.
The Office of Disability has been working on a number of initiatives to streamline the process of applying for and getting disability benefits. Could you describe some of these efforts for us?
Yes, I can. And this will be a lesson learned kind of description here. Back in the early 90s, the agency engaged in what probably a number of organizations were doing, and that was reengineering. And, you know, automation was really hitting its stride, and people were saying, gee, we're only going to be able to improve our processes and change them. And we came up with some pretty, for us in the program, bold and innovative kinds of changes. In some ways, they were perhaps bigger dreams and hopes than reality, but we wanted to really try to improve the process for the public as well as the taxpayers. And the truth is that over really many more years than we would like, we've kind of piloted and tested and prototyped many different angles of these things. The commissioner who came in, Joanne Barnhart, our current commissioner, made some very good decisions about let's stop, you know, testing and piloting and let's move on with what we've learned here. So we are doing some things. For example, one of the things we tried to do, which quite honestly we are not going to end up doing, is we tried to drop a step in the process. I mentioned several times that when you first file, you get an initial decision by individuals from the state agency. Well, a second step is if you don't like that decision, generally means you weren't allowed, you can appeal, and that state agency makes a second decision called a reconsideration. Then if you're still denied, you can appeal to an administrative law judge. If you're still denied, you can appeal to our appeals council. And if you're still denied, you can go into district court and on up the line. A lot of steps we talked about streamlining that. So we tried in 10 states in this country with about 25% of the people covered by those 10 states. We dropped that second step. If you got denied by that state agency initially, you didn't go to a reconsideration if you appealed. You went right into the administrative law judge step. What our test showed us is that moved people along faster. It gave pretty good service. What we did is we told the state agencies, instead of taking your resources and making two decisions, initial and reconsideration, put them into one really good initial decision. And that turned out pretty well. They did a better job of developing information, and more people were properly allowed early in the process. Great service. What we couldn't live with is by not having that second step in there, it meant a significantly greater number of people had to appeal on to the administrative law judge step, which is a much more time-consuming, much more expensive step, and simply wasn't good service to people. So the commissioners kind of called a stop to that. We're going to continue the pilots in a few states until we come up with an alternative, but now we're looking for an alternative to that process. My point is we are kind of constantly testing things, but the disability program has grown very, very large, number one, but also very much through a lot of tensions between, the administrations, the Congresses, the courts, the advocates, and there's a lot of reasons why the process is as it is. And making changes to any of it is kind of one of those things where you push in here and it pops out over here. So we're making some changes and improvements, but it's probably slower than any of us would like.
Well, it's a good stopping point because it's time for a break. Come back with us after the break as we continue our conversation with Ken Nibali of the Social Security Administration. SSA consistently receives high marks for customer service. How have they done this? We'll ask Ken when the Business of Government Hour returns.